Stories podcast. My name is Kit, and if you are a new listener, hi, it's nice to meet you. You have no idea how glad I am to have you here with me for this episode, and hopefully for all future episodes.
Possible abduction and starvation.
So, if you think that any of this might cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then you might want to skip this episode, because I don't want anybody to get upset. However, in any event, I do not recommend this episode for children. So, if any little ones are listening nearby, well, it might be a good idea to turn this podcast off until later, or perhaps to put on your earbuds or headphones. Parental discretion is strongly advised. And now, with all of that having been said, we will move on to our featured story. On February 2nd, 1959, a group of 9 hikers were camping during a ski trip on a mountain in northern Russia when something happened during the night which led to them running away from the place where they had been sleeping. Unfortunately, no one has ever been able to determine what exactly they were trying to escape from. The area in which the incident took place was named Dyatlov Pass in honor of the group's leader, Igor Dyatlov. Almost 20 years later, a similar event occurred in the United States. I am now going to tell you that story. On February 24th, 1978, a group of 5 friends from Yuba City in the state of California went on a road trip to watch a basketball game. They left after it was over. Then, for some unknown reason, drove up the side of the mountain and into the wilderness. They were never seen again. The names of these men were Gary Matthews, Jack Madruga, Ted Wire, Jackie Hewitt, and William Sterling. Their ages were between 24 and 32. They had developmental disabilities of one kind or another, but none of them had issues that were severe. They all knew how to function in the everyday world. However, they were all enrolled in a daytime program for mentally handicapped adults. Gary had schizophrenia, but was on medication to control his symptoms. Jack had a low IQ, but hadn't been diagnosed as mentally disabled. Both men had driver's licenses and had successfully served in the U.S. Army. Ted Wire was employed for a while at a snack bar and as a janitor, but he quit at the urging of his family, who thought these jobs were not a good fit. Jackie Hewitt was sometimes slow to respond and tended to droop his head. Some people would mistakenly think that Jackie was Ted's brother because of the fact that Ted was very protective of him. Jackie had trouble understanding the precise steps of how to make a telephone call. So Ted would make the call, then hand the phone to Jackie when it started to ring. Jack Madruga months, he had been charged with assault twice following his return from Germany. These incidents occurred on occasions when he failed to take his medication and lapsed into a disoriented psychosis that landed him in a Veterans Administration hospital. According to his stepfather, quote, "Gary just went haywire," unquote. However, no other similar incidents are known to have occurred. On Friday, February 24th, the five men drove about 50 miles north from Yuba to Chico, California, to attend a college basketball game. When the game ended at the California State University at around 10 p.m., they stopped three blocks away at a convenience store, annoying the clerk who was trying to close up. They bought one Hostess cherry pie, one Langendorf lemon pie, one Snickers bar, one Marathon bar, two Pepsis, and a quart and a half of milk. The next day, when they failed to return from Chico, their families became concerned and called the police. They were supposed to play a basketball game of their own on February 25th as part of a tournament with a free week in Los Angeles if they won. Their clothes had been laid out the evening of February 24th before they left for Chico. Wire had asked his mother to wash his new white high-top sneakers for the tournament, saying, quote, "We got a big game Saturday. Don't you let me oversleep," unquote. The sheriff's department began searching for the men. On Tuesday, February 28th, a forest ranger found Jack Madruga's car abandoned at an unpaved road near Oroville at an elevation of 4,500 feet or 1,372 meters. The turquoise and white 1969 Mercury Montego was located around a 2.5 hour drive from Chico in the opposite direction from the route they would have been expected to drive home, and way up in the mountains in the Plumas National Forest. Police found no evidence of foul play at the site of the car. However, the car was unlocked, one window was down, and the keys were nowhere to be seen. Candy wrappers, milk cartons, and basketball programs were in the car, but maps were left in the glove compartment. There was no obvious damage to the car. Despite the bumpy road, it had around a quarter tank of gas, and it was not stuck in the snow. The driver had either used astonishing care and precision, the investigators figured, or else he knew the road well enough to anticipate every rut and chuckle. Forest rangers searched the area for 5 days and found no trace of the men. Almost as soon as the search began, a severe blizzard moved into the area, covering any tracks. Around 9 inches of snow had dropped on the upper mountain. Searchers risked their lives struggling in the snow. his car out, he suffered a mild heart attack. He saw two sets of headlights coming up behind him at about 11:30 p.m. One was a car and the other a pickup truck. He had enough strength to get out of his car to flag them down. The two cars stopped about 20 feet from him and began randomly looking around with flashlights. The passengers then left together in one car. Joseph spent the rest of the night in his car before walking back down the mountain in the morning. He didn't think much about what he'd seen until he heard about the disappearances. A woman reported seeing the five men in a red pickup truck on Saturday and Sunday, about an hour's drive from the site of their abandoned car. She owned a store there where two of the men came in to buy food. One of them made a phone call from a nearby phone booth, and the other two stayed in the truck. There was no further news until the spring snows melted on the mountains. In June 1978, a man riding his motorcycle through the area noticed a broken window on a Forest Service trailer. The trailer was located about 19 miles up the mountain from where the car was found. A Forest Service snowcat ran up the road to the trailer on February 23rd, leaving a packed path in the snow that the men might have followed. Inside the trailer, he found the dead body of Ted Wire. Search and rescue teams then began combing the area near the trailer. The day after Wire's body was discovered, searchers found the remains of Madruga and Sterling. They lay on opposite sides of the road to the trailer, about 12 miles or 19 kilometers from the car. Madruga had been partially eaten by animals and had been dragged a few feet to a stream. He lay face up, his right hand curled around his watch. Sterling was in a wooded area, scattered over about 50 feet. There was nothing left of him but bones. 2 days later, just off the same road, but much closer to the trailer, Jack Hewitt's father found his son's backbone, along with a pair of Levi's and his ripple-soled shoes. A deputy sheriff from Plumas County found a skull the next day, about 100 yards downhill from the rest of the bones. The family dentist used the teeth in the skull to identify the remains. Hewitt's remains were located northeast of the trailer, just like Sterling and Madruga. The searchers found three wool Forest Service blankets and a two-cell flashlight lying by the side of the road, less than a mile northwest of the trailer. The flashlights were slightly rusted and had been turned off. It was impossible to tell just how long it had been there. They found no sign of Gary Mathias. His tennis shoes were inside the Forest Service trailer. This suggested to investigators that he might have taken them off. someone else had been with him in the trailer, because he could not have bundled himself up in this manner. His leather shoes were off and missing. A table by the bed held his nickel ring with dead engraved on it, his gold necklace, his wallet with cash inside, and a gold watch that the family say had not belonged to any of the five men. Ted's feet were also badly frostbitten, and inside the trailer, the authorities found heavy clothing, matches, playing cards, books, wooden furniture, and other materials which could have easily been used to start a fire. But there had been no apparent attempt to start a fire, despite the freezing temperatures on the mountain. A propane tank was disconnected to the trailer, which could have provided a steady source of heat and cooking fuel. Yet, it was untouched. According to Yuba County Police Lieutenant Lance Ayers, quote, "All they had to do was turn that gas on, and they'd have had gas to the trailer and heat," unquote. In a storage shed outside, there was a year's supply of sea rations. These were canned, pre-cooked, and prepared meals issued to members of the U.S. military, usually for use on the battlefield or other isolated areas. The men consumed 36 of the meals, but left the majority of them untouched. In addition, there was a huge supply of freeze-dried meals. One of the sea ration cans had been opened with a U.S. Army can opener. According to John Thompson, a special agent from the California Department of Justice who had joined the investigation, the whole thing was, quote, "bizarre, with no explanation and 1,000 leads. Every day, you've got 1,000 leads," unquote. Jack Madruga's mother believes, quote, "there was some force that made them go up there. They wouldn't have fled off in the wood like a bunch of quail. We know good and well that somebody made them do it. We can't visualize someone getting the upper hand on those five men, but we know it must have been," unquote. Deadwire's sister-in-law has a more sinister opinion. She thinks, quote, "they've eaten something at that game, at the parking lot. They might have seen it and didn't even realize they seen it," unquote. Some people believe that the men simply got lost, took a wrong turn, and ended up in the mountains, just too confused and disoriented to return. But how realistic is that explanation? Chico to Yuba City is a straight drive along Highway 70 through the Central Valley with no snow at that time of year. A new shortcut and get them lost instead. Why was the group's car left unlocked? Especially with gas in the tank and in good working order. Did he forget to lock up? Did they somehow leave the car and lose the keys? This could explain the strange story told by Joseph Skyons, where he said he saw flashlights around the car. Could they have been searching in the snow and then rattled by his yelling for help? How did the group end up around a trailer far away from the car? Dead wire was found in the trailer, but Madruga, Sterling, and Hewitt were found in the locality, but several miles away. How did they walk in normal shoes without outdoor clothing in snow that was several feet thick? Was the group together and then decided to separate after Ted's death to try and find help? Why did Ted evidently starve to death? Some of the rations in the trailer were eaten, but most of it was untouched. Ted apparently had a slow and painful death from starvation, losing over half of his body weight. So, why wasn't he eating with so much food nearby? This is a question that has led some family members to think they were abducted by someone for some unknown reason. There are so many questions, but no answers. And because of that, we are now at the end of our story. So, listeners, what do you think happened? What a crazy, chilling, horrible way to die. Were the men victims of an abduction? Did somebody have a psychotic break and somehow force the others to go along? Why did the men let themselves starve and freeze to death with plenty of food and a source of heat very nearby? None of it makes any sense. Listeners, do you have any thoughts? If you do, you can email them to whisperedtruestories@gmail.com. But take care to type that as all one word. There are no hyphens, dashes, or underscores. On a future episode, I will share the thoughts and comments that have been sent regarding the stories that have been featured on the podcast so far. If you don't want your name used, or if you would like me to use an alias for you, just let me know. And listeners, if you have any suggestions for possible cases or topics, please feel free to email them to me. I really want to hear any ideas that you may have. Also, in addition to email, you can follow and comment on Twitter at the handle @WhisperedTrue. Once again, one word, @WhisperedTrue. Finally, if you like the podcast, including the concept of the podcast, you can help out the show by going on iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully, there will be a new episode every 2 weeks. Well, that's my target. And hey, I'm starting to get on track. track. Keep your fingers crossed. And maybe I'll even stay on track. And listeners, please stay tuned after the episode to hear about a couple of great podcasts that you might want to try. And with all of that having been said, this episode has now reached the end. So, until next time, my name is Kit, and I will leave you now with this thought. You've got to look on the bright side, even if there ain't one.
Hey everyone, this is Sarah from Good Nightmare Podcast, a podcast where I like to talk about all things strange and unusual, whether it's mysteries, historical crimes, or fairy tale origins. I hope you'll come along for the ride and join me as we delve into some spooky tales. Happy listening!
The world can be a mysterious place. It can also be a boring place, so let's focus on the mysterious. Rusty Hinges is a podcast that explores mysteries, hoaxes, natural phenomena, and weird history. Basically, anything that's a bit, well, hinky. Season 1 topics include the tale of Clarence Roberts, a man who died more than once. And then there is the maybe kidnapping of June Robles, the sun that danced in the sky over Portugal, and an unsolved murder on the high seas. Rusty Hinges is generally skeptical, but never dismissive. Well, usually not dismissive. You can find Rusty Hinges on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. That's Rusty Hinges. R-U-S-T. You know what? I have faith in your spelling abilities, so go and subscribe to Rusty Hinges, and maybe you'll solve a mystery. Probably not, but you know. You never know.